Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody. Today I'm delighted to welcome to the show Dr. Jack Singer. Dr. Singer is a nationally renowned clinical psychologist, sports psychologist, marriage and family therapist, and geez, there's a whole bunch of designation that he has, but you know, this will start, who regularly appears on such shows as Wolf Blitzer, Glenn Beck, CBS News, MSNBC, and Fox News. He also spends time over at ESPN discussing issues involving elite athletes and how to help them understand their performance problems. Dr. Jack diagnoses exactly why they aren't performing consistently and shows them how to turn their performances around quickly. I asked Dr. Jack, I know you're asking, well, why in the world are you interviewing somebody who is a sports psychologist? He's not. He's not just a sports psychologist. All of us have consistency issues. All of us have performance issues. All of us have fear and angst problems. And given the economy these days, we have a lot of stress. Dr. Jack is the perfect person to talk to today about just so many issues that small business owners and online entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs of any description might be experiencing in the current economic and business crisis. Dr. Jack, and I'm going to go ahead and get this out right in the beginning of the show, is also a friend of mine. He is somebody that I turn to when I have questions that simply I just don't have the answers to. He is also a very tremendous member of the Coaches Council for the Virtual Assistants University. He has been tremendous over there, and we're so glad to have him as a business partner. So good morning, Dr. Jack, and welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Denise. The introduction was so wonderful that I could sit here and listen all day to that.
All right. But it's all true. You know, I don't have time for BS, so whatever
right.
I say is always
right.
True. But you
know,
are a highly... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you made a great point when you said, why would we have a sports psychologist? And it's not just that I'm not just a sports psychologist. I think what your audience needs to understand is that the skills that one teaches an athlete or teaches a client if I'm doing a clinical session are precisely the same skills that I would teach an entrepreneur in order to overcome their dread and their fear and their stress levels.
Exactly. One of the things that all of us talk about is Tiger Woods. I mean, everybody who pays any kind of attention knows that Tiger Woods has multiple coaches. He has multiple people teaching him multiple things about multiple disciplines, if you will. And you're exactly right. I mean, you take, and I know you do this with my students, we all have issues that we need help with. And you're such a perfect resource for that. So I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, I know you are a very highly credentialed and a very well-known psychologist, and you're also, and a lot of people don't know this about you, I do, but a lot of people don't, you're also a keynote speaker, you're an inspirational and motivational speaker, and yours is a tremendously interesting and exciting story. And before we kind of launch into the different questions that I have for you, and trust me, I have a bunch of them, I would love for you to tell our audience just a little bit about yourself, and then we'll just take it from there.
Well, you know, I practiced as a clinical and consulting psychologist, sports psychologist for many years, and I used to go down to the Chamber of Commerce. This is in South Florida where I was living at the time. I'd go down to the Chamber of Commerce meetings once a month and spend 10 minutes along with a lawyer, a dentist, and so forth, welcoming new people who came in and sort of in a networking way, and I would do it in a funny way. And one day at the end of that one of those meetings, one of the gentlemen, a computer person, came up to me and said, "You're a funny guy." I said, "Thank you very much." He said, "You know, you can make a lot of money doing this." I said, "What do you mean? I don't really want to be a stand-up comedian." He said, "No, you could join the Florida Speakers Association. I had no idea what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what professional speaking was all about. And that moment in my life turned everything around, because I joined the Florida Speakers Association, learned how to become a professional speaker. Then I joined the National Speakers Association, and it's been a love fest ever since. The point here for all of your listeners, Denise, is that you never know when another door is going to open up. Just keep your eyes wide open.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You are also widely known as the Patch Adams of speaking. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, I come into these speaking engagements with all of these credentials, PhDs, and, you know, all of my experience and so forth, but I believe firmly that the best way that people will rivet their attention and their retention is if there's humor involved. So I make all of my presentations fun and exciting. I give out goofy prizes, clown noses, things like that, things that the yo-yos that people haven't looked at since they were kids, and we make it fun. And the kinds of feedback that I get from the folks afterward are, the hour went by so quickly I couldn't believe it, and for the first time I had fun in a meeting instead of just listening to a dry presentation with a PowerPoint. You know, so mine is completely fun, exciting, interactive, and I guess people label me as Patch Adams because I make them laugh.
Well, and you're right. It just makes so much more sense. If you're enjoying yourself, if you're engaged, if your endorphins are high, you're going to retain that information. It's going to be more exciting to you.
Right.
So, I mean, that makes perfect sense to me, but, you know, I like humor, so what do I know? But listen, what I have so many questions for you. I know that you're a very busy guy. You're all over, you know, you're on television, you're on radio, you're working with elite athletes, and I'm so grateful that you're here with us today. One of the questions that I have, and this is a big one, what is the number one reason why people of all descriptions, and my attitude is there's an entrepreneur in all of us, if we just recognize it, unleash it, and let it go. Why don't people unleash their true potential? What could be holding them back?
Well, it's a great question, Denise, and there's a great answer, and that is what I have labeled their internal critic. Everybody has a little voice inside their head that they speak back and forth to hundreds of times during the day, and unfortunately for most of us, about 92% of what that little voice says is negative, like don't take a chance, don't risk it. You're not a good father, you know, you could have done better, you should have done this, you shouldn't have done that. This is what I call the internal critic. In fact, once I wrote a book called Conquering Your Internal Critic so you can sing your own song. And it's really all about, by the way, anyone in your listening audience who has more than one voice better call me immediately after the meeting and we'll discuss it.
I'll call you in about 5 minutes.
Okay. And so,
you can talk to me again.
Okay. So the internal critic is really the negative kind of function that goes on in our heads, and it's based really on things that happened to us as a child growing up. I'll quickly give you a quick little thumbnail sketch of that. When we're growing up, well-meaning but misinformed parents frequently discourage us from attempting things or taking risks or doing things they wouldn't do. Or, you know, for example, the parent who says, I appreciate your willingness to try out for the football team, but you're really not that good an athlete, so you're going to be embarrassed. Or, you know, you're not quite pretty enough to be the homecoming queen, so why do you want to put yourself in that position? So parents who think they're really helping us are really hurting us, because what happens during those formative years is our subconscious mind, which is supposed to be like a garden full of flowers, now has weeds planted in it by parents and teachers and other authorities who are giving us negatives and discouraging us from spreading our wings. And as we start growing up, we take those weeds and we nourish them ourselves by repeating those same ideas. We sort of water those weeds and fertilize them by saying, no, I'm not good enough and I better not try it. You know, in my particular case, I had a guidance counselor who told my parents that I wasn't college material because I was a clown in class and that I wasn't a serious student. And, you know, if I would have listened to that information, I would have given up in school and not tried. But instead, fortunately, I took that as a challenge and went down a different road. And what I did was gathered up a bachelor's, a master's, and two PhDs, and 13 years later came back with those diplomas and laid them down on his desk and really sort of ripped into him saying, if I had listened to you, nothing would have happened. I would have been a bum. I wonder how many people's lives you ruin by making blatant statements like this to them and their parents. So, unfortunately,
was he able
many
to
of
answer
us,
that, or did
you know,
he
just had his mouth open because he didn't really remember who I was. He figured when I was laying the diplomas down that I was one of his great students. So I had to remind Mr. Brown, was his name, that yeah, I was the one you told the parents that I was a screw-off and wouldn't make for a good student. And all you did was try to discourage me from being funny, which I needed to do for my self-esteem when I was in high school because I was very shy. And so it's that kind of thing that develops our internal critic and keeps us from really expanding to the limits that we can expand. My job as a therapist is to help people demolish that internal critic and really open up avenues to creativity and to success that they never, ever conceived could be possible.
I love that story. We all have a story similar to that, but while you were recounting that, I was wondering, and you probably don't have an answer to this, but I'm wondering after his mouth snapped shut, Mr. Brown, if he kind of did some, you know, did the white light on his soul and did some introspection and said, wow.
Well, if he did,
I
don't know
some
because
apology
I was,
somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know if he did, Denise, because I was so emotional at that point, he just grabbed up the diplomas and walked out of the office. So I don't know whatever happened there, but.
It would be hoped that you helped him.
Well, I hope
by
so.
By calling him on it.
Yeah, I hope so, but who knows, he was probably close to retirement by then.
Yeah.
So it was really sad because my parents would see him every so often, and he never really acknowledged, I still don't think he put it together who I was, because there had been that 13 years between the time he told me and when I finished my schooling. So, but in any case, it made me feel better, and I was hoping that if it would help one youngster somewhere along the line, it would be important.
I think it's a very important story because we do have to go back and face those boogie people, whether they're real or whether they're perceived or whether they're self-chatter. And in my life, I have found that self-chatter is the most negative thing that I've ever faced. It's not what other people think of me because that's only a perception, clearly.
Right.
So, but the perception that I have of me is the one that counts, and oh boy, we
and
can beat ourselves up.
Yes, and the good news there is you have a choice in what you're going to say to yourself. It doesn't matter what seeds people have planted in your subconscious mind. You have choices. And that's what's wonderful about psychotherapy is teaching people the choices that they have and teaching them how to stop negative, unfortunate thinking and how to change it and turn it around to more realistic, positive thinking. And it's also important for people to understand that events in life, like the economy, for example, are inevitable. But what you do about them are your choice. So you don't have to go down a negative path, and you don't have to listen to negative people who may be in your family, or you may be married to a negative person, or you may be working with negative people. You don't have to accept the messages they give. They want you to simply join their negativity club so they won't feel guilty being that way, or they feel better about it because you're the same as them. You can refuse that in your head and say, doesn't matter what this person's telling me, I'm going to continue to struggle to overcome all of this and succeed.
Excellent, excellent point. And what another thing that I've been doing, and I don't know what your take is on this, but I turned off the news. Turned it off. Can't stand it.
That's correct, because if you turn on any of the major news stations, you know, you're going to see bad news, and a lot of these stations thrive on bad news, you know, children being kidnapped, awful things happen with respect to terrorism, murders, the crime rate. So there's nothing good about the news, really. And so it's much better if you read or watch on TV light things that that give you a laugh, that make you chuckle. Go to movies that are light. I like to go to chick flicks, which they're called, with my wife because they're innocent and they make me laugh and they let you go off into fantasy land and so forth, and they help me let the stress just drain away.
I watched Young Frankenstein this week and laughed my fanny off again.
There you go.
Year.
Walk this way. No, this way.
That's right. I love that movie. That tells you a lot about me. I love that movie. But one of the things that I really wanted to ask you about, too, is there's a lot of stressors for people that they're facing right now, and our world is uncertain. There's no question about that. I mean, even if you turn off the news and either, you know, do like I do and thumb your nose at it, doesn't mean it's going away. I don't know if you heard that thunder or not. We are under a tremendous thunderstorm and really bad weather. So if I get lost here, I do apologize. Okay. But there's a lot of thunder going on behind me. But I know that people, and I talk with them every day, they're not necessarily my clients. They may be friends. They may be people online that I'm chatting with. People are very worried, and I like to term it, it's like a low-level feeling of dread. You go to bed with it, you wake up with it. It's almost something you can't really ignore. And I know that you have some great tips for getting around that.
Well, again, nobody gets a feeling of dread or gloom unless they're thinking something negatively in their mind. It's important for your listeners to understand that events are neutral. They never cause our emotions. What causes our emotions is how we interpret those events and that self-talk that I was referring to before. So if people are looking at their business and they're comparing the bottom line with what it was last year, that's a neutral event. But if they say something to themselves like, oh my gosh, I don't know how long I can do this, I may be out of business, that's going to cause doom and gloom kinds of emotions. On the other hand, if they say to themselves, well, this is an opportunity for me to think out of the box and creatively and think about doing things a different way than I would have ever thought about last year, then that's not necessarily a doom and gloom response. That's a productive response. So people always have choices into how they're going to interpret events that befall them or take place in the world and so forth. And that's where the practice comes in you know, conquering their internal critic so that eventually they can sing their own song. You know, let me tell you quickly, Denise, that over the years I've worked with many people who have been fired or laid off from jobs, and they always come to me in a panic mode. I don't know what I'm going to do now. And what happens in about 90% of those cases is those people wind up coming back to me a few months later saying, oh, Dr. Jack, you were so right. And I say, that's nice to hear. Right about what? And they say, you told me when I first came in that this would force me to look for new opportunities, and now I'm in a better position than I would have ever been if I stayed in that job. And that's happened about 90% of the time. So if people keep their eyes open, there are always opportunities when there's doom and gloom. You know, a simple example, of course, would be the stock market, which is a scary, dangerous place. But if people don't have a problem selling short, then they're looking for bad times, and that's when they start selling short and making money that way. So there's always an opportunity for you if you keep your eyes open and let your creative juices flow.
Agreed. You know, we've always had depressions. We've always had recessions. We've always had economy ups and downs. And I try to remind people of this. Never in our history, in the world history, as far as I know, and I tend to be a student of history, have we ever had a time where everybody was down. It's never happened. Never.
Well, not that we remember, but the Great Depression, you know, everyone was like that.
There were people, you know, the railroad barons, I mean, there were people who were doing very, very well. There was always somebody who did okay than okay.
And there are people these days that are doing okay. If you look around for them, you will find people that are doing okay. So I still do not believe and will never accept that there are no opportunities in this climate.
I agree.
There are plenty of opportunities in this climate. And, you know, as with anything else, you need to look for a need and find a way to satisfy that need with people. Now, it could be, for example, in your business, coaching people. There's more of a need when this climate's like this, so that your services are in demand to coach people. Therapy. There's more of a need for people like me. The problem is that no one can pay for it.
But if you need it, you can find a way to pay for it.
Exactly. So, you know, I think, and also we have to understand that everything that happens is temporary and cyclical. So that, you know, even though people are saying, well, how long is it going to take for this to turn around? It will turn around. And,
absolutely.
You know, and a lot of it is based on politics, which changes every 3 or 4 years. So we have to really be patient.
Well, I think it's going to change quicker than that. I think people have had a belly full, and I think 2010 is going to be an eye-opener for a lot of people, but that's just me.
In terms of Congress and the Senate, that may very well be true.
Well, one can only hope. So what are some of the most prevalent stressors that people face right now? Can you name a few that are, you know, people can instantly identify and maybe say, well, let me look at that and change that?
Well, one of the, you know, one of the ongoing stressors is going to be, you know, how am I going to educate my children or pay my bills and things of that nature if my business is flat or maybe even declining? And, you know, again, when you understand your internal critic is operating here, the best thing to do is to change that to something that's positive, which is I need to spend the next 2 days brainstorming and just writing everything that comes to my mind without screening it out of things that I can do that I always said I would do but never had the time to do when my business was going well. And some of those things may be looking for new business opportunities that you just put aside because you didn't feel the need to do that. So I always tell people to brainstorm and maybe get in groups of people and brainstorm ideas that will help you.
Masterminding.
Yeah, that just came about in the last few years, and I think part of that...
I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Just let other people put all their brains together with you and come up with ideas. I know a gentleman who belongs to a masterminding group where one of the members of the group came up with an invention and decided that he was going to share that with the group so that they could all participate in putting the upfront money for it and getting the benefits of it. So this mastermind group has taken 5 or 6 people who were professionals and out of work, and now they've put all their energy into an invention which will probably make them, it's in the medical field, will probably make them more money than they would have ever made if they stayed in their jobs. So
right.
That's an example of putting your heads together and using it in a creative way. And, you know, when I work with individual clients on the phone or in person, I'm always working with them on unleashing their creativity. And let's talk about things that you've kind of kept to yourself in your heart of hearts but never really wanted to explore. Maybe this is the time to explore that. And there's something else that I have people do, Denise. I have them not simply write down short-term goals, like what are you going to do by next week to make things change? And when I give my speeches, I always end it with an action plan, and people have to write down what they're planning on doing within the next 7 days, and then I have them exchange phone numbers, and they check on each other to make sure they're doing it. But I
like
have
an accountability buddy type of thing?
Exactly.
See,
so
I hired a coach for that, a fitness coach for that.
Excellent.
Even though I was going to the gym all the time, I wasn't staying as long. I wasn't going as often as I need to, and I finally hired a trainer.
Right.
Just so I would get my butt there on time, which,
right.
You know, sometimes you have to do that.
That's it. And so in any case, what I do besides having them write down the goals is I have them do the following. And your listeners may want to write this down. Number one, write down a short-term goal that's realistic.
Okay. I'm putting this in the chat room. Short-term goal?
Short-term goal that's realistic, even if it's something like losing X number of pounds or whatever, a short-term goal.
Okay.
Number two, visualize yourself as you will feel and be and look after you've accomplished that goal.
Okay.
And that's important because when we visualize things and consistently visualize them in a positive way, even though they haven't happened yet, our subconscious mind tends to want to make it happen. The same
you
as if I said...
You tend to believe
it?
Is that what you're saying? That you tend to believe what you're telling yourself?
Yeah.
What, which goes back to negative chatter. You believe
right.
the garbage, so
right.
why not believe the good?
Right. But see yourself as if you've already accomplished the goal and
okay.
keep visualizing that. I have lost 20 pounds, and look how wonderful I feel. Look what happens when I get in front of the mirror. And just keep visualizing that. Or I came up with a new idea for my business, and there's a big smile on my face. Now, the subconscious mind is interesting because it wants to make these things happen. It'll follow your direction, either positively or negatively. And it doesn't know reality. It doesn't know whether it's happened or not. It just tries to work on making it happen. For example, if I suggested to you to close your eyes and make believe you're biting into half of a lemon and feel the bitterness in your mouth, if you really visualize that, your subconscious mind will believe it, and you'll start salivating as a way of cutting down the lemon, the acid in your mouth. So your brain will think that you're doing it just because you're visualizing it. So
right.
that's what we have to do, is we want to visualize something very positive about accomplishing that goal. Now, the third step is very important. What are my emotions? What are they going to be now that I've accomplished this goal? Again, imagining that you've finished it, you've accomplished the goal. What are my emotions? Happiness, joy, satisfaction, pride, things like that. So that we know what we're seeing and we know what we're feeling. And the most important question, Denise, is what can I do in the next several weeks to sabotage myself from accomplishing this goal?
Ooh.
And that is the
That's a big question.
That's the most crucial question, because that gets into the nuts and bolts of what people do unconsciously to sabotage themselves on a daily basis from accomplishing their goals.
So that's how you identify those. Do you write those down and just say, I'm not going
just
to do this
down.
Anymore?
Just write them down.
Just become aware of them. Okay.
Yeah, and it would be like, if we take a simple weight reduction plan, how can I sabotage it? When my spouse isn't looking, I'm grabbing.
Let me show you the ways.
Yeah, I'm grabbing a handful of peanuts, or I wait till my spouse goes to bed and then I munch on something, or, I reward myself with food when something good happens. I mean, there are a million and one ways people sabotage themselves without thinking about it. They just do it quickly before they think about it.
Well, yeah, and I think you're right, and I know I do this, and then you have the head-banging moment like, oh, gosh, why in the world did I do that? But I think a lot of us just do it without thinking, without thought, without any planning. We just go do it.
Right.
Because, so what do you do about that?
Yeah, that's a difficult one, because what happens is people tend to be impulsive and they want the quick reward. If my business isn't going to quickly reward me, at least I can eat and feel good instantly. Or if my business isn't going to reward me, maybe I can have an extramarital relationship where I'll feel good. I mean, people try anything for instant gratification. And that's one where I'll give you a simple solution for that one that works so often that it'll amaze your listeners. You get a fat rubber band, the kind that the mail comes in, and you put it on your wrist. And every time you're tempted to do something that you know is inappropriate or self-defeating, snap that rubber band. That's step one. That'll get your attention. Snap the rubber band. This also works, by the way, when you have negative thoughts and you recognize it. Snap the rubber band. That's step one. Step two is you take a couple of nice, deep, relaxing breaths in through your nose and out through your mouth. In through your nose and out through your mouth. Deep breaths starting from your diaphragm, so that if your hands were folded over your stomach, your hands should move out when you breathe in and they should come back in when you breathe out. Now, I mention that because many people who are anxious and nervous and worried breathe in a shallow way. It's all in their chest and shoulders. If they fold their hands over their stomach and they take deep breaths, their hands don't move. That's the wrong way of breathing. So just learning how to breathe through your diaphragm, like musicians and singers know how to do, will go a long way toward adding to your relaxation and reducing stress. So step two, after you've snapped the rubber band, is the deep breathing. And step three is congratulate yourself for stopping something you would have done otherwise, and give yourself some positive thoughts about how you're going to go in a different direction from now on.
So you're basically retraining your muscle memory, so to speak.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, a quick question, too. You're talking about shallow breathing, and I have caught myself doing that in times of stress or when I'm just really exhausted. Doesn't that shoot your blood pressure up?
Well, I don't know if the shallow breathing does unless you do it so much so that you're hyperventilating. If you hyperventilate, for example, I had a client in the office the other day who developed a fear of driving on the freeway, and it came out of nowhere, and I was explaining to her that there's no such thing as it coming out of nowhere. There must have been negative thoughts that led to this happening. To make a long story short and to answer your question, I said, let's get in your car and get on the freeway. So we got in the car and got on the freeway. She started hyperventilating and developed a complete panic attack while we were on the freeway, which was fine.
Who was driving?
She was. So she would have had
a very brave doctor.
She would have had no problem if I was driving. But I had to point out to her that was great, because I wanted her to see how nothing bad would happen even if you have a complete panic attack. But yes, her blood pressure shot up, and the hyperventilation makes you feel like you're going to pass out. But you don't.
No.
In all of my history, I've never ever read about or heard about someone who had a car crash because they fainted from panic. Your mind will not let you faint. It'll have you pull over to the side of the road or things like that, but you won't pass out. So I had to
that self-survival instinct.
Right.
Right.
So yes, blood pressure can go up if you hyperventilate. But the point is, if you want blood pressure to stay low, the best thing is relaxing breathing. And that's something we tend not to do. The doctor tells us something, we start worrying, we start breathing more quickly and more things of that nature. So
right.
Those are the kinds of things we have to be aware of, is to constantly have a quieting breathing kind of routine that we use during the day.
I know you have a hypnosis series, too, that is very helpful. I've listened to all of your hypnosis series, and I love the Loving the Inner You. That's my favorite.
Well, the hypnosis, you see, this is what I call the secret weapon. Most people do not realize how powerful hypnosis can be in a very positive way, even though most people have been hypnotized hundreds and hundreds of times. For example, driving down the highway, you get to your destination, and you say, my goodness, I'm here already. I don't even remember seeing half of the signs along the way. Well, you were in highway hypnosis. Your subconscious mind was driving the car while your conscious mind was off somewhere daydreaming or thinking about something else. So we do that all the time. We get involved in a book and we don't hear people calling us to get our attention. That's all hypnosis is focusing your concentration on something. So I have taken the power of hypnosis and made a series of CD audio hypnotic programs to help people with whatever their particular problem will be. The one that you mentioned, Loving the Inner You, is all about building your self-esteem and getting rid of those negative parental and authority figure kind of messages that have developed into one's internal critic. And the kind of accolades I get from folks all over the country who use this is, I can't believe how much better I feel, and I'm ready to move on and do things that I never would have done before. And as you said, it's also very relaxing. It's wonderful for insomniacs. It puts you right to sleep, if that's what you want
to
use it.
Well, I am an insomniac, so it does help me. In fact, and I tell this, you get mentioned whenever I speak, and you're probably not going to like this, but anytime I'm speaking in public or I'm speaking on a teleseminar or a class, or somebody else's show, I reference you because one of the things that you have done, and you've done it a couple of times, and I'm always so tickled about it, but when we first started working together, you called me up one time because I think I had emailed you at 2 or 3 in the morning, and you said in your very doctor voice, Denise, do you ever sleep? And
right.
I tell that story all of the time.
Right.
And my response was, well, I'll sleep when I'm dead, and I think that worried you a little bit. But
well, it did,
you
because
know, I'm a cat napper. So.
Yeah, well, sleep, unfortunately, you need to go into REM sleep for several hours a night for your brain to be rejuvenated, and it also has a lot to do with your health. So a lot of people underestimate the importance of sleep, and they think they can get along without it, which is not the fact. Now, in my case, you know, I shouldn't be talking because last night I worried so much about getting up on time for your program because I'm two hours earlier than you.
Yeah,
I kept waking
yeah.
up to look at the clock to make sure that I would get up, which was a silly thing to do since I had the alarm set and the alarm has never failed me. So that was silly to do, and I should have practiced what I preach.
But you're here.
I'm here.
But I do. I reference you a lot. It's like, you know, he's just this. But I do. I listen when I really can't sleep, which doesn't happen often. But every once in a while, I will look at the clock and go, oh, my gosh, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, for crying out loud. Go to bed. And I'll put in that tape, or that CD, rather, and off I go. It really is helpful to me, and I've referenced that in the chat room as well.
Good. Thank you.
So, oh, you're very welcome. Trust me, you have helped me sleep, and God knows I need that help. So what steps can people consistently take? We're going to talk about stress now because there's a lot of stress. Some of it I know is self-inflicted. Some of it is external and then allowed to be self-inflicted. But there's a lot of it. No matter where it's coming from, there's a lot of it, particularly in today's economy. So what can people do to consistently master the stress in their lives? So important. Number one, call you. You're offering a free... consultation today, aren't you?
Sure. I'll talk to any of your listeners for 20 minutes without charging them anything and give them some tips into what's going on in their life that can help them, and if they want to use me for more than that, that's up to them, but there's no obligation or anything like that. And I'm always happy to help people. You know, I became a psychologist because maybe naively thinking that I could help a lot of people, and that's one of the reasons, by the way, that I joined the speakers tour, because instead of working one-on-one, I discovered ways that I can work with hundreds of people at a time, and that's one of the reasons that appealed to me. When I'm done speaking, I frequently have 5, 10, 15 people come up to me and say how important this was at this time in their life. And by the way, I do have an audio series based on my speaking, so that all these things I'm saying today is in an audio series called Remarkable Resiliency Skills for Uncertain Times. So there are all kinds of things people can get from me. And but in terms of your original question, is you have to make a deal with yourself that you're going to start today, right this minute, as soon as you get off of this conference call, to start changing your life. And that means get out a pencil and paper and start writing things down that you can do differently. For example, is your diet and is your rest situation what it needs to be, and your exercise situation? Those are three ingredients to one stress level. You need to control your diet, stay away from white flour. I know that's impossible for most of us. White flour and caffeine, stay away from caffeine. That does nothing but raise anxiety levels. Stay away from sugar as much as you can, and eat fruits and vegetables and wholesome kinds of meals. Number two, you need to be in an exercise program every day. I don't care if you walk your dog, try to do it briskly, things like that, but get into something every day to keep yourself toned that way. And number three is the sleeping regimen that I mentioned. And then
I'll get there. I promise. I do the others, but I don't sleep well. But I'll get there.
Okay, good. And
I will.
The other thing to do, well, you know, I should practice what I preach, because I go to bed at 3 in the morning frequently. We're doing a lot of work late at night when it's quiet. But
well, we exchange emails at oddball hours, so
yeah,
I know.
We do. But then I try to make it when I go to bed at 3 in the morning that I don't need to get up early the next day, so I sleep in a bit unless my dog barks. So, but since his hearing is shot, he doesn't bark so much. Anyway, so one of the things is to make sure all of that physical stuff is taken care of. But then from an emotional standpoint, here are things you can do. I have a lot of these. I have a book that has 77 of these listed, but I'll give you some of the highlights. Every night, right before you retire, have a little notebook next to your bed and write down some things that happened today that you're grateful for. Now, that's interesting, because most people go to sleep thinking and worrying about things that they don't know how to solve.
Or they didn't get done. That's a big one, too.
Right. And
you beat yourself up.
Precisely. And that's exactly why people have insomnia, because if you go to bed worried about things, your subconscious mind will keep doing that while you're trying to sleep, and it'll keep breaking through the sleep barrier and waking you up. So write down what you're grateful for, because we so often take for granted what we're grateful for instead of focusing on what we're grateful for. And I also really encourage people to write down things they're proud of that they've accomplished that day or that week or what have you. Because, again, when we feel like we're stuck in mud and only bad things are happening, we lose track of the fact that we actually did accomplish some things. And what were those?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you help a child, your child, for example, feel better about him or herself, and you just took that for granted? Did you make a difference in the life of somebody? I always encourage people to volunteer. That's one of the most fascinating ways that people enhance their mental health. Through research, we've shown this, is that if you volunteer to help people who are less fortunate, and that can, you don't have to do something that takes a lot of time. For example, if you're at a toll booth, just for the heck of it, pay for the person behind you, and then you can giggle with glee when you look in the mirror and watch the confusion on their face when the attendant says that person in front of you already paid, and they start waving and everything else. Or when you're in line at a supermarket and there's a harried mother there with a child that's cranky, or let her get in front of you and say, not a problem. If you see someone who looks disheveled and they're coming into a restaurant or a fast food place or something, and it looks like they could use a helping hand, you know, tell the manager to give that person a meal and don't tell them where it came from, and just sit there and watch the person There are so many things we can creatively come up with that make us feel better in terms of volunteering and helping other people. And it's great for our own stress level and our own mental health.
It is. I had something similar happen to me yesterday, and it wouldn't have occurred to me that I just made a comment off the top of my head, but I happened to be in a store yesterday, and you know me, you know that that's not my natural habitat. I'd rather be hit by a beer truck than be in a store. I don't like to shop. But I had, you know, I was out and about in web development meetings, and I had to go get my eyes checked and went to a store while I was at it. And I looked at a lady who happened to be in front of me in the checkout stand, and she was just so cute. She was probably, I'm going to say, late 80s. And I just loved her. She stood up straight. Her hair was done. She was wearing the cutest little outfit. And Jack, she had sandals on. Her toenails are manicured. The lady was in her 80s. Mm-hmm. I got in a conversation with her because I was entranced with the lady. And I said, I love your shoes. And we got in, and she was so excited. Somebody noticed that she had gone to so much trouble to care for herself. And I didn't even think about that. I just thought she was so cute with her little manicured toenails.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And she made me smile for probably the better part of a day because she was so delighted that somebody noticed her, which I thought was kind of sad in a way, but she was such a delightful lady.
And
so we carried on a conversation for about 20 minutes.
Oh, sure. And what you did for her actually probably really made her day.
And she made my day, actually.
Yep. And so that's the thing to remember, is that you can say something, you can do something, it doesn't have to be dramatic, and it will make a huge difference in the life of somebody, and that's the key to do. That's really the key. That's what's important. So those are some of the things that people can do. There are all kinds of things people can do. Get away from your office, even if it's your home office, and make sure you go out and get with nature once a day at least. I don't care if you walk barefoot in the grass or you get in the snow or you walk around and look at birds. Get with nature and just calm yourself down. You're not dying. The sky is not falling. You still live in a wonderful place, hopefully, that you can enjoy, that perhaps you have stopped enjoying because of all of your worries and so forth. And just get with nature. Go for a walk. You know, take your children to a zoo. There's all kinds of things that you can do that you don't think about when you're so obsessed with your own issues. And then I would suggest that everybody in your audience read a book called Learned Optimism. And the author's name is Seligman, S-E-L-I-G-M-A-N.
Did you write a book with him, Jack?
I didn't write a book with him. I did some other things with him, but I didn't write a book with him.
Seems like I saw your book on the name of a... It seems like I've seen you in conjunction with him.
Not with him. The one you're probably thinking of is a book called Dynamic Health, where one of the authors is Bernie Siegel.
Bernie Siegel.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, he's the one who wrote Medicine and Miracles and things like that. He used hypnosis to cure people with major diseases and things of that nature.
Right.
But Seligman wrote a book on optimism, and he's like the number one man in the country now on doing this research, and he really teaches you how to become an optimistic thinker rather than a pessimistic thinker. And it's critical to do that. Let me give your audience a quick example of what I mean. It's not the simple terms we may think of looking at the glass half full. It's more than that. Pessimistic people are people who, after they have a setback of some sort, whether it's sports, a loss, or a loss of their job, or a loss of income, or any kind of a setback, they view that as something that's going to be chronic, and they worry that they'll never recover. And those folks continue to have more setbacks. But people who have a setback and look at that as temporary and say, it doesn't matter, it's unfortunate that it happened, but there are some circumstances to explain this, and I'm going to work beyond that so I will be successful, those people always recover. And Seligman teaches you how to go from being a pessimistically oriented person to an optimistically oriented person. So I think it's probably one of the most critical books that's been written in the last century to help people deal with stress, move on, release their creativity, and so forth.
Right. And that can be found just about anywhere, Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, Amazon.
And,
Learned Optimism is the name of it, yeah. And,
okay.
I have things along those lines in some of my books and recordings. In my speeches, I always have a section on how to do that, but he is the guru who wrote the book. Okay. So I would suggest that that's something that everyone in your audience really ought to do.
That's going on my Christmas list. I will ask Santa for that one.
Yep, and they even wrote one for children so that you can start your children in the right direction. So, one for adults.
I have to say that anytime I get around pessimistic people or negative people, the door hits me in the fanny. I'm on my way out.
Yeah.
I don't even stick around.
Yeah, and most people do not want to take the energy that they feel it takes to try to convince those people that what they're doing is a disservice to themselves and everyone around them, because they
mm-hmm.
continually try to force you to join that negativity club. It's almost like someone who smokes tries to convince people who stop smoking to smoke again, because it makes them feel less guilty or less
right.
weak that, you know, why can't I do it? If they did it, I'd rather see them start smoking again. People tend to be like that. They sort of find other people who are similar to themselves so they can rationalize whatever they're doing. So, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I tell people, get away from negative people if you can't change them. And if you live with them, that's unfortunate. Then just let it go in one ear and out the other.
Divorce courts handle that pretty well.
Right.
Well, sometimes you just have to. So let's get back to humor. We've been on optimism and pessimism, but one of the things that I really enjoy about you is you've got this great sense of humor. And you teach other people how to use humor to overcome so many obstacles, and whether they're small or big or giant. So humor is a huge thing. And humor can actually bring us health, wealth, and what else? Stealth?
Yeah, so health, wealth, and stealth.
You have to explain that one to me. I get the health and wealth. I don't get the stealth part.
Well, it can make you stronger.
Really?
Maybe I used the wrong word. I was looking at stealth as being a strong person. Maybe it's incorrect use of the word. But it sounds more like sneaky if you're stealthy. But I didn't mean it that way. That was my error.
No. I'm looking at that going, okay, I've got to find out what that means.
Yeah, I think that was an error on my part. But you see, I can move beyond that. I'm not going to focus on the error. I'm going to focus on the message I want to give.
No, I'll focus. You go ahead. I'm going to focus on it.
All right. So the point is that research that started 20 years ago, quite by accident, with someone who was given a death diagnosis and said it was a 1 in 500 chance he could recover, started watching movies of the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges and other movies when he was in the hospital ready to die. Things like that, he had them only show him those things. The Marx Brothers, the Three Stooges, and Candid Camera were the three he watched. This person then literally laughed himself into health. The disease went into remission and never came back again, and the physicians could not explain it. And this person started what it then became called the Institute for the Study of Humor on the Human Body. And the research
really?
Has been, yeah, nothing short of unbelievable and spectacular about how we can laugh ourselves into health, because laughing releases the same kinds of endorphins that are released when you do vigorous exercise, when you engage in sexual activity. All of these stress-beating kinds of endorphins are released with laughter. And it's interesting, Denise, because the average child in this country laughs 500 times a day, giggling and all of that. The average adult laughs 15 times. Now, why is that? Yes. So the answer to that is because as we become adults, we start screening ourselves and thinking it's immature to giggle and laugh and have fun and do things that make us laugh. Or we've been told in school, okay, Jack, do you have something to share with the rest of the class? You know, things like that, where teachers discouraged us from doing that. And so we tend to inhibit ourselves from letting that little laughing, fun child come out, and that's exactly the wrong thing to do. Perhaps if you think about...
So we filter all the good stuff out?
If you think about famous comedians... Robin Williams, but I'm thinking about ones that died when they were almost 100. So many comedians who spent
their whole life
laughing. Yeah, George Burns,
yeah,
Jack Benny.
Yeah, love George
they
Burns.
They all lived to be almost 100 or more than 100.
They did.
And they spent their whole lives laughing. I had a personal experience in my own family where my dad was on his deathbed. He was in the intensive care unit, plugged into a respirator. His heart was failing. He was septic. All of these things happened. And my dad, who was an extremely funny person, when I asked him to write down something that was funny, because he couldn't talk with the tubes in his throat, he wrote down some things that were so hilarious that the nurses, the doctors, everyone started laughing. And once he started doing that, within 4 days he was out of the hospital. Turned everything around. So I saw it for myself.
And you worked with, speaking of tremendously talented comedians, my all-time favorite, Lucille Ball. Didn't you work with her?
I worked with her once on a show, one show, and she actually was responsible for me becoming a psychologist because I told her that I wanted to go to Hollywood and become a comedic actor, and she said, don't waste your time. Not that, she said, I'd already had a master's degree and I was accepted for a PhD, and she said, you know how many comedic actors there are and you have a chance to go get a profession, a real profession. So she convinced me to go back to school, but what I always buried
in my mind. She wanted you to have a backup plan.
Yeah, and I always buried in my mind that I really, someday I'm going to still get this chance to express my humor in front of people. Well, I found a way with my credentials. I could then become a professional speaker and have a captive audience. So that's what happened.
Jack, I have to tell you, the only person I know who has been counseled by Lucille Ball.
See? There you go.
I think I need to gold plate my telephone. This is amazing.
Yeah, and we had a nice debate at lunch one day when I was taping her show. She looked just like my mother. And I would keep saying,
Lucille Ball?
Yeah, and I said, Lucy, you look just like my mother. And she would keep saying, no, you don't have it straight, Jack. You mean your mother looks like me.
Looks like her.
And we would
kind
of get into that debate in front of all the other people and everyone start laughing. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I love her. I mean, there has never been a piece of work that she did that I didn't just find remarkable. So
remarkable,
so
but she was a tough cookie.
I bet. Well, you have to be.
For her. The only reason I got the little role I got was she fired someone on the spot and grabbed me. Because she was tough to work for. She was a real taskmaster and a perfectionist.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
As one, there's a comment in the chat room that says, it's a quote, every man deserves to fall in love with a gorgeous redhead, and this is from a redhead, every man deserves to fall in love with a gorgeous redhead at least once in his life, Lucille Ball. So, listen, you have a new book out, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I have a book for teachers, but it really is something that's applicable for everyone. It's called The Teacher's Ultimate Stress Mastery Guide, 77 prescriptions to dramatically raise your resiliency. And those prescriptions are good for anybody. This book happens to be for teachers because they're such a beat-up profession and under-recognized that I wanted to, focus on them, so I have a lot of examples for teachers. But the stress mastery tips are for everybody, and anyone can use them.
Well, you're going to be teaching that, and you are teaching that in the Virtual Assistance University. Can you give us some for instances?
You mean of
for the stress mastery?
Yeah.
The stress mastery guide. Can you give us some tips really quickly? We have about
three or four more minutes. Yeah, some of the ones are the ones that I've given you already. And, other tips are to get together with other people who are suffering from the same kind of stress, especially if it's job-related, and brainstorm ways to do things differently. Instead of keeping it to yourself and suffering in silence, get with other people. Excuse me. It'll make you feel much better. And see if you can brainstorm ways to overcome this that other people have never thought of. And again, whenever you're brainstorming, just let your mind take off and don't screen anything out. There are beautiful gems of wisdom that will come to you when you do that.
Mm. Somebody on a prior show, and I thought this was a brilliant idea, she said, get on a little Olympus 900. It's a little recording device. It's just a little, and my husband went and bought me one. It's the cutest little thing, but you just stick it in your bag or on your bedside table or wherever. And the point that she made, which I thought was brilliant, and I wanted a chance to discuss this with you, was that if you're talking to yourself and you have a great idea, or with me, I wake up at 3 or 3:30 in the morning, and I'll have these massive ideas, and I tend to keep a journal by my bed with a Sharpie, and I try to write them down in big block letters so I don't forget about it the next morning. Her point was that if you record it, and even if it's in a kind of a muted tone, you hear the passion in your voice, you hear what woke you up that you were so excited about, or you have a brilliant idea when you're in the Walmart, or you're walking through the house, you have that little thing handy so you can talk with yourself and have this dialogue with yourself, and those words of wisdom are there for you. And I thought that was just a tremendously good idea. What do you think about that?
Well, you have made my day because...
All right.
I'm sitting here looking at my little Olympus recorder that I use to do hypnotic recordings for clients, and then I...
You have one too?
Yeah, I have one too, and I make hypnotic recordings for clients, and then I send them out. But I never thought of using it for the reason you just mentioned, which is absolutely fabulous. I have all kinds of scratch paper in my car when I get an idea. It makes a lot more sense, and it's less dangerous to just pick up this recorder and say those things to myself. Yeah. Well, no, that's a great idea.
I thought it was too, and I thought it was just because I do journal, and you know, I'm constantly writing things down. But here's the thing, Jack. I will get in the middle of nowhere, and it's inspiration. It's coming from somebody else or something else, or just a you know, culmination of the day's activities or the brainstorming, you know, sessions that I've had, or talk with you. Or I'm telling you, ideas are going to come out of this. Later on today, I'm going to be recording like crazy. And all of a sudden, you know, I'll have to go write something down, and then I'll go back to look at it, and this happens all the time. What was I so passionate about? Why did I need to find that pen? Why did I have to write that down? What the heck was I thinking? And so much of it gets lost because I'm not hearing the passion in my voice. I'm not hearing entire sentences. You know, I might try to scribble in Denise shorthand, which makes no sense. So I have found just in the week that I've had this thing that it's a remarkable tool.
I think that's fabulous. People should do that all the time. I think it's great, especially because we're talking about positive things. What happens, unfortunately, when people are sleeping is they're passionate about negative things, and that's the wrong thing to do. But when you come up with positive things, record them and listen back. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Should we give out my 800 number for folks who may
want to
call?
We should.
Okay.
We should. And tell people what you know why they should call you. You've got 20 minutes that they can chat with you, and I strongly recommend that people do this.
Okay.
And tell them how to reach you.
Sure. It's 800-497-9880. If I'm not here, it's my voicemail. Just leave your name and number, and I will get back with you just as quickly as I can. If you'd like to email me, just email me at drjack, Dr. Jack, at askdrjack.com, like asking a question. And I would suggest you put sports in the subject so it doesn't get lost in my spam because it won't recognize the person who's sending it to me the first time. So just put sports and it always goes to the right place. And I will be more than happy to help anyone in your audience for 20 minutes. I may even stretch it to 30 if I'm talking to somebody. You know, with no obligation, no pressure to do anything else. I just want to help
you.
Right.
Great. That is such a – thank you, Jack, because that is such a tremendous offer. I have so many people say, I need somebody to mastermind with. I need somebody to talk with, and I just don't know who to turn to, and there you are. I mean, there's Dr. Jack Singer. So everybody who is listening, take advantage. And if you're downloading this later, Jack, how long is this offer good for? Because a lot of my radio shows get downloaded and listened to, and, you know, within 3 or 4 or 5 days, we get a lot of listens.
Sure, we'll make it good for the next 2 weeks.
Oh, okay, very generous. Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
Well, I am going to open up the lines and see if there's anybody on here who has any questions. This is Denise Griffiths and Dr. Jack Singer. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show, and do you have any questions for Dr. Jack?
Hi, this is Judy.
Hi, Judy.
Aha. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Denise. Hi, Jack.
Hi.
I'm the journaling genius, so I love all the talk about writing things down.
Uh-huh.
But I have a question on
Jack,
let me
interrupt here, Jack. Judy is also on the Coaches Council for the Virtual Assistants University, so let me introduce you to.
Okay, great. Great to meet you, Judy.
Nice to meet you, too.
Thanks.
So one thing that I heard was your issue with your teacher that said, you know, you'd never do that, and I wonder how that might have driven you to get all the degrees, almost from a positive response to a negative comment, because I know that often drives me. Somebody says, I can't do something, it's like, watch me.
That's a wonderful question, Judy. Absolutely wonderful question. Let me answer it briefly for you. You know, Robert Frost wrote a poem once, part of which was Two Roads Diverged in a Yellow Wood. Sorry,
one of
I
my
could
favorites.
Make, yeah, sorry, I could not take both. I took the one less traveled by, and that made all the difference. So we have choices. And fortunately for me, even though I wasn't obviously a psychologist then and didn't know about the internal critic, I decided at that point I have to make a choice right here that's going to change my life. I'm either going to think that I'm not capable of doing something which will disappoint myself, my parents, and everyone else I know, or I'm going to prove that this son of a gun is wrong. And I then decided to make that choice. Now, many people would not make that choice because the easier choice is to just screw around and not do anything because you've convinced that you don't have what it takes. So people have to make hard choices sometimes and take the risk. But guess what? The fruit is out on the branches. So you need to get out on the branches, go out on a limb, because that's where the fruit is.
Excellent.
Okay, Judy, any more questions?
Well, the other thing is a lot of my clients obviously are using the economy, or maybe using it. They're, you know, the economy, their businesses are struggling, and they're, you know, they're having tough times and that, and you know, it's sometimes difficult to gear them up to switching that into being creative, and how can they get out of it. So maybe, you know, one more little tip on that.
Well, you know, the core for the whole thing is really what they're saying to themselves. You know, I have a book, you know, that has some, you know, actual step-by-step ways to do this, but there is a self-help book that's out there that really is the best self-help book that's ever been written. So let me plug that self-help book. It's not my book. It's called The Feeling Good Handbook. The Feeling Good Handbook by David Burns. Now, the older version is called Feeling Good. Don't get that. But The Feeling Good Handbook, you can get a used copy from Amazon. It's the best self-help book that's ever been written, and the whole gist of the book is how to change your thinking, no matter what the circumstances are that you're in. That would be the best service that you could provide to your clients, really. That's the kind of thing I do on the phone with people, is I teach them those skills. But if someone's not going to get on the phone with someone like me, that book is the next best thing to do.
Good. Okay. And I definitely need to call you, because I have more than one voice in my head. I have a village.
Yeah. I'm speaking rapidly because I didn't know how much time we have, so I'm trying to squeeze.
The show is not streaming, but we can chat as long as we need. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. Good. Okay.
It's still recording, so.
Okay. All right. So I'm here to answer anything else then.
Okay. So, Judy, does that take care of it?
That's it. Thank you.
You are very welcome. Well, we had a few other people, but I'm not able to get them on the line. This happens with Blog Talk Radio. They'll have their hands up, and then there's nothing there. So right now I think it's Yumi and Judy. So, so that is David Burns, The Feeling Good Handbook?
Yeah, make sure it's the handbook. His old version is just called Feeling Good. That's out of date.
Out of date, okay.
You want the handbook. And it's a step-by-step. Okay. It's really the best personal psychotherapeutic thing that you would ever find written for the lay person, step-by-step instructions on how to turn anything around, to change any negative emotion almost instantly once you learn how to do it.
Well, part of it, I think, if I have to guess, I haven't read the book, to be honest with you, I haven't heard of David Burns, which surprises me, but I guess the first thing is identifying the thing that you need to change.
That's right. And you do it by identifying the negative emotion. Whenever you have a negative emotion, like anxiety, for example, you immediately stop and write down, what was I thinking right before I recognized that I'm feeling this way? And once you write your thoughts down, he then has a list of distorted types of thoughts, and you see if your thoughts fit into one of those distortions, which most of the time they do. And then he shows you how to change. Pardon?
Would irritation be one of those distorted thoughts?
No, that's not a thought, that's an emotion. So once you feel irritated, you would then look at a thought. I'll make one up. A distorted thought would be, I'll probably never get this right. Okay. Now that's the distortion of called fortune telling. Like you've predicted that no matter what happens in the future, you'll never get this right. And then he gives you a list of questions to challenge the thought. Do I have any real evidence that I'll never get this right? And am I exaggerating this and so forth? And once you're through going through his checklist of questions, you pretty much throw that thought away. And once you throw those thoughts away that caused your irritation, you're not irritated anymore. So he really teaches you how to get at the thoughts that caused the problem in the first place and how to change them to healthier, more rational thoughts. And that is really the strong foundation for the number one therapeutic modality that we use in therapy today. So it's all right there in the book.
I will definitely be getting that book.
Yeah.
Well, Judy, do you have anything else that you need to ask Dr. Jack?
Actually, one more. You mentioned that, for instance, people that need therapy or people that need coaching probably the most, and then they say, well, I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm a business skills trainer and coach, and I want to help more people. And so how do you overcome those kind of blocks that people have?
Well, that's a tough one, because if people are so focused on their financial situation that that predominates their thinking, it's very hard to convince them. You know, I do things like I will adjust my fee somewhat for people who are in those kinds of, you know, dire straits, but I also make it clear to them that you have to have an investment in something to get something out of it. I don't care if it's advertising or therapy. If you're not invested in it, both psychologically and with money and things like that, you won't get out of it what you would have otherwise. So I explain to people that you're going to have to pay for these visits. We can adjust it somewhat, but you're going to have to pay for it, but it will come back tenfold if you focus on what I'm teaching you to do. Then you'll never have to worry about money again, because you'll start thinking the right way and acting the right way. And don't sell yourself short, Judy. Don't give your services away, because that cheapens the services.
Yeah, actually, that's one thing I don't do. I advise any of my other coaching clients who are coaches. I coach a lot of coaches, and I'm like, don't give freebies all the time.
And don't give away five free hours.
What kind of coaches are you coaching? Are they athletic coaches or coaches who do this kind of coaching?
Coaches who do business or life coaching.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not very athletic, so I don't do. I don't step in. Although I do have one of my clients is an Ironman triathlete.
Yeah, the triathletes are people that are really amazing, and I work with a lot of them. And yeah, because they can really focus on something and make sure they do it despite obstacles. So they're good people to learn from.
Yeah, personally, I think they're a little crazy, but
they do it for the.
We'll edit that part out.
Yeah, thank you. My client knows who he is. If he listens to this, he'll know.
No, I've worked with a lot of triathletes over the years who want to make sure that they're not going to lose something as they get older. And we use psychological techniques, including hypnosis, to compensate for where their bodies aren't going to be able to keep up as much as they used to.
Right. Yes, I do hypnotherapy with him before his races, and to keep him relaxed. I don't know how you can be relaxed to an entire Ironman, but he was and is. So.
Great.
That's what we work on. So.
That's wonderful.
Wow. Well, this has been fascinating. And this is really, Jack, thank you so much. This has been a really great conversation today. I'm so glad you were here.
Sure, and if you get, you know, the kind of feedback that says we wish there was more of this, or we're sorry we missed it or something, well, you know, I'll do it again anytime you want, Denise.
Really? Thank you.
Sure.
I will take you up on that from
sure.
the heart.
I'll
take
new examples. It'll all be fresh. I'll give new examples and all kinds
okay.
of things.
Okay. Right. Absolutely. And honestly, while I have you both on the phone, I had a brilliant idea at 3:30 in the morning. You both know me, so this is no surprise, but it dawned on me that I need to get the entire Coaches Council for the Virtual Assistants University and probably do a series of teleseminars to introduce you to everybody.
That'd be great.
So
honey, I just wrote down we should mastermind together.
There you go.
I just written that down.
I think it's time to start scheduling those calls. I mean, we can introduce you both and of course, Tony Bodo and a few other people to people outside of the current crop of students in the university. So if y'all are available, I would be delighted to do that maybe in the next month.
Sure. That'd be great.
All right. I think it's time for Christmas. People need to treat themselves to a new career, and we're the people to help them do that.
There you go.
There you go.
So, well, listen, Jack, thank you so much for being here with me today, and Judy, you as well. And, Jack, you have given some really valuable information to our listeners, and this show, I guarantee you, is going to be downloaded a lot. And I know they're going to appreciate everything that you've had to say as much as I do. And thank you, everybody, for being here. The show will be available for download in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths and Dr. Jack Singer. We are wishing you a wonderful weekend and a very happy and safe Halloween. And I will see you next week. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Denise.